Think film. Hunting Lane Films presents. In association with Silverwood Films, original media. A Hunting Lane Films Journeyman Pictures production. Wearing just a pair of briefs, a young bearded man sitting on a dusty wooden floor in an apartment. His back's against the bottom of a sofa, and his legs are splayed out underneath the coffee table pulled up in front of him. Now, wearing an unbuttoned short-sleeved shirt, he mooches into a bedroom and pokes a button on top of an alarm clock. Half Nelson.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Okay.
Later, sitting in a car wearing shades, he checks his teeth in the rearview mirror, takes a puff on a cigarette, and gets out. He kicks the door shut and walks away, carrying a briefcase, a flask, and some sandwiches in a bread bag. A boy walks down the stairs of a school towards some double doors, as the man walks through them and up the stairs. A mixed class of young teenagers are sitting at their desks in a classroom when the man comes in. He writes, "What is history?" on the board, and drags over a desk, sits on it and rubs his eyes. He throws a board rubber at a table but misses.
What is history?
Opposites.
You can read the board. So happy to hear that. No, what is it? What does it mean? Stace.
Change.
Thank you, Stacy. I'm glad to hear someone's paying attention. History is the study of change over time. And what's change? It's this. It's opposites. It's two things that push against each other in opposite directions. So the civil rights movement. Okay? It's two opposing mentalities. In the South, the majority believes all men are not created equal. And there's a minority who believes that they are. So that minority struggles, and it fights, and it pushes, till eventually it becomes the majority. Am I boring you? Huh? Let's give you some examples, okay? Of opposing forces, like, I'm gonna go night and day. What else?
Big and little.
Good. Anything else?
Left and right.
Left and right, very good. Stace?
Me and you.
You and I.
You and I.
Teacher, student, anything else?
Mr. Dunn?
Yeah?
Just wondering if you could count me and Gina's bald-headed sister as opposites.
Oh. Insult.
Gina, come on, tell me you're not gonna take that. You got a bald sister? Is your sister bald? Give me something.
May 17th, 1954.
Oh. Mm. Okay.
And I expect some thought from you. I don't want just dates and facts. I want to know why. I want to know consequences. I want to know what it means. All right, now back to the bald sister. What's going on with that?
Right. Left. Back. Forward. I'm shooting. You got your girl open over here. She's sending out smoke signals over here. She's got the fire. She's going, I got it over here, nothing. And you're like, come on, get open. Oh, yeah. Right. You gonna put that down and come play or what?
I ain't done yet, coach.
All right, top of the key. Three passes. Here we go.
Still wearing his gym gear, he hums to himself as he turns on a lamp at home. He puts his whistle down on a cluttered side table and takes his sports jacket off before pressing his answering machine and heading into the bathroom.
Thursday, 11:16 a.m.
Hello, this is Taylor calling from Consolidated Credit. This is an urgent message from Mr. Daniel Dunn regarding your outstanding balance. Please call me back as soon.
Thursday, 5:25 p.m.
Hey, Dan, it's Rachel. I'm in town for a while, you know, my mom. Anyway,
6:25 p.m.
Hey, Dan. It's Rachel.
Dan comes out of the bathroom looking thoughtful as he listens. Later, he sprays some cleaning fluid onto his glass coffee table and wipes it. Dan cracks his knuckles, then picks up a small plastic tube. Now Dan's in a crowded bar, rubbing his face, bleary-eyed, while squeezing past people in the throng. He gets to the bar and takes off his coat. Then, smiling at the barmaid, he orders a drink. She puts a glass down on the bar and pours Dan a large measure of spirits. He looks across at two women, who smile back at him. He takes a drink and looks back at them. Later, Dan's dancing closely with the pair, with one in front and one behind him. Then, outside the bar, the girls are snorting drugs.
I love Oprah.
But the thing is, I was just fucking things up just to fuck them up.
Right. No.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But I was a writer.
I hate words. Yeah.
Right, because everything that is worth...
Right, just forget it. To your teacher.
I will teach you.
He kisses them both on the lips.
What am I supposed to teach them? You know what I mean? What am I supposed to teach them?
Right.
So that's the point, you know what I mean? Yeah. If you can help one student.
Yeah.
No, if you can change one person, right? If you change
you
one person.
Change them all.
No, it's not that point. The point is if you change one.
I want to dance.
Then you can teach them.
You want to dance?
The rest of the village.
I want to dance.
Dan draws on his cigarette and rubs his nose with his thumb. Driving up a deserted street, Dan pulls over outside a house with a large black 4x4 in the drive. A man wearing headphones saunters over and gets into the passenger seat.
What's going on, bro? What's the word? What's that?
About this man?
Mm-hmm.
Some little street shit. Got that man check out.
Dan puts on the man's headphones and nods his head in time with the music.
Yeah, you gotta feel that shit. What you think about that, man?
Yeah, it's not bad. That's the street shit.
That's the street shit. So what you need, teach? Another 8?
I only got 30.
Word.
It's been a long week.
You want that other thing?
Dan nods. At school.
On May 17th, 1954, the Supreme Court ruled on the case of Brown versus Board of Education, making it illegal for states to segregate public schools. This was a major step forward in the struggle for racial justice and helped begin a flurry of bold and heroic actions known as the Civil Rights Movement.
In his car, Dan's looking up at the roof, squeezing drops into his eyes. He puts down the bottle and rubs his face, blinking. A basketball match in the school gym.
Get on her! Babby, get on her!
All right, Babby.
Students sit on bleachers, cheering on the young players, while Dan watches from a bench, rubbing his face. A pretty young woman quietly walks in the door. It's Rachel. Dan sees her, and she looks at him uncomfortably, before walking to a bleacher and sitting down.
Come on. Talking, ladies, talking.
Dan looks despondent. The flip-down scorecards on a table say 18-32. Dan rolls his shoulders back and stands up. He gives each of the team a high five as they leave the court. Rachel's standing on the sideline watching Dan as he talks to two colleagues.
I like our chances against St. Joe's. I think that we thing is, if we could just figure out a way to put the ball in the hoop, I think we'll be fine. Stace, good job tonight.
Thank you.
You did a great job. Is there anyone else in there?
Not a soul.
Thanks for tonight.
All right, bye, Mr. Dunn.
Rachel walks over to him, and he goes to walk away, but turns back to face her.
What are you doing here?
Came to check out some basketball. I heard this was the place.
We need a little work, but we're having fun, so, you know.
How are you?
The same old, same old.
I'm happy to see you.
It's good to see you, too. You look good.
Come on, I got fat.
Oh, I know. That looks great. You look healthy.
Do you want to go get some...
I gotta,
Just like a quick coffee, I just want to...
Let's get some coffee.
Yeah.
I can't tonight. Do you want to do it another night?
Okay.
Okay. Hey. How's your mom?
Did you get my messages?
She stares at him, and he stands looking back at her. Dan looks blank as she walks away. He looks into the door of the girls' changing room.
Hello? I'm coming in. Anyone?
He looks around the cream-tiled room with metal lockers on the walls, stroking his beard. He walks into a side room, then appears back at the doorway, putting his arms on the walls either side of him. Dan looks ahead thoughtfully and stamps his foot on the ground. Now he's holding a lighter up at a crack pipe and breathing in the smoke. He hangs his head with his chin against his chest. Then inhale some more. With the pipe resting in between two fingers, his face absorbs a look of ecstasy. Eyes closed, his lip begins to tremble as someone enters the room outside his cubicle. Dan cringes and raises his feet up, resting back onto the toilet seat. He twitches silently. Looking down, he listens, still clutching his knees tightly with his hands. Dan listens intently as the flush churns. He blinks and looks up, with beads of sweat forming on his face. A pair of white trainers appear in the gap under the door.
Somebody in it?
Dan sitting, crunched up in the corner of the cubicle, as Dre pushes the door open. He looks frightened, and he screws up his eyes as she looks down at him, seeing the pipe and lighter in his hands.
Sorry.
It's okay, enjoy.
Dan falls forward off the toilet, stands, and sits back in the corner.
It's okay, I'm fine.
He looks up at the ceiling and rubs his face.
I'm sorry.
Dre looks at him uneasily.
Are you okay?
Can you help me up?
Dan reaches out, and she helps him to his feet. Then he leans up against the doorframe, pressing his nose and forehead against it, with his eyes closed.
Are you okay?
Dre looks down at him. She fidgets with her baseball cap in her hands. He lies on the floor, blinking quickly.
Some water?
Dre turns and walks away as Dan rubs his face.
I'm sorry. But I'm fine.
She hands him a wet paper towel. He grabs it from her and squeezes the water from it into his mouth. Looking down at Dan, Dre takes the towel and mops his forehead. Dan presses his hand on top of hers.
Just don't go, okay? Just for a minute. Just for a minute.
She stays still, kneeling next to him. Later, Dan's driving, with Dre in the passenger seat. In the wing mirror, she's wearing an anxious expression, holding tightly onto the front strap of her seatbelt.
See you tomorrow.
He nods, staring straight ahead with his elbow perched on the open window, propping up his head. Dre pauses, looking away, then back at him as she gets out of the car. Dan watches her walk off. Inside her flat, Dre opens the door and switches a light on. She takes off her backpack and puts her keys down on a table before flicking on the TV and heading into the kitchen. Dre turns the light on in the small, homely kitchen, walks over to the fridge, then takes out a plate of dinner. She sits down thoughtfully as the dinner cooks in the microwave. Sitting alone at his kitchen table, Dan slowly drinks from a glass with a cigarette perched in his other hand. He seems pensive and lost in thought. Dan sitting in a classroom, chewing softly at something, with his face locked in a serious frown. The kids are chatting at their desks, some looking bored and playing with their pens. Dre's desk stands empty. Still frowning, Dan looks over at it intensely. Outside, Dre's in a basketball court, shooting hoops on her own. She crouches behind a wall as she sees Dan walk past the wire fence carrying his briefcase and papers. From a distance, Dre sees him get into his car and rub his face wearily with his hand. She watches him drive away. Later, wearing her rucksack and baseball cap, Dre's cycling along a road, past overgrown fields, then traffic on a bridge. She stops on the pavement and looks out at the cityscape, bordering the river. Her mum gets home wearing a black uniform with badges on it.
Hey, kiddo. How's Daryl's leg healing?
I don't know.
You didn't go to the hospital?
No.
Did your father pick you up from practice last night, Dre?
No.
Motherfucker. How did you get home?
Mr. Dunn.
Who?
Coach.
I'm tired of this. Something has got to change.
What?
You don't gotta worry about me.
Dre's mum pauses at the counter and looks over her shoulder.
Oh, look at you, Miss 12.
13, I'm 13 now.
Oh, so you grown, huh? You can take care of yourself, is that it?
Pretty much.
Well, that's a relief. I guess I ain't gotta cook up these burgers then, huh?
Dre smiles and gets up from the sofa.
Hey, Ma. You know this dude, Cesar Chavez, was fasted.
Cesar who?
Cesar Chavez. Was fasted for 35 days. That means he ain't eat for 35 days. Something like Gandhi used to do. Mm-hmm. Think you could do that?
Dan's asleep on his battered sofa with a cushion on his chest and a cat to his side. He opens his eyes and looks over at the phone.
Hi, honey. Mom.
Dan empties an ashtray full of cigarette butts into a bin, then puts a vinyl record away in its sleeve. Dan lifts some books onto a shelf, then stands in front of a sink washing up. Next, he's on the living room floor doing sit-ups, then press-ups. He picks up the phone handset and dials before putting it to his ear. With the phone lodged between his ear and shoulder, Dan looks down at his hands as he waits.
Hello? Hi, is Rach there?
Back in the classroom, Dan's looking out of a window while rubbing his palms together. Dre's desk is empty again as he looks across at it. He takes a drink from a mug as she walks through the door and sits down.
Well, I feel good today. Anyone else feel good? I need a volunteer, and I need somebody who feels strong.
Arm wrestling.
So what we got here is two opposing forces, Terrence and myself. And we're pushing against each other, and as long as one is stronger, and it looks like it's T, the change is slow and consistent. But once the other side becomes stronger...
Dan strains, then wins against Terrence.
There's a turning point. Thank you, T. Make sense? Okay. Now, turning points can happen like that. They can be physical, or they can happen on a greater scale. Like a war or something, so... Why don't you do me a favor and write three examples of historical turning points that we've talked about in class. Okay?
To Principal Henderson.
What's that?
Have you even opened the civil rights binder I gave you?
Taking a deep breath, he smiles and looks down at his feet with a shake of his head.
The civil rights binder I have opened, and it's got some great stuff in it. I really think it's great. Yeah, I'm just providing a little general context.
I need you on the civil rights section by next week.
He nods.
Is that gum in your mouth?
Dan takes it out and drops it into her hand. He sits back at his desk in the classroom, and Dre watches him as he takes a sip from his mug. Dan smiles at her.
He was a Gemini. He was so cocky. Every day I saw him, he used to go like, oh, you happy, you got me, you happy, you got me. And I'd be like, please, you don't want to call me, so. Y'all like Gemini?
Oh, what's his name? Mr. Easton and Mrs. Wright.
I'm
in the
pretty
movie
sure they're married.
No. I don't.
They can't. Gemini, you don't know what she's talking married. About, so don't talk.
No, but they look weird together.
Y'all think Mr. Dunn is married?
Nobody want to marry him.
Would you want to marry him? Come in the room, throwing his finger around, tell him to move the desk. Why can't he move the desk? I'm getting tired of that.
Don't forget
every
about
morning.
His glasses.
Them bifocals.
He started throwing them around, throwing the chalk like he all cool and fly and everything, but...
Really?
Quiet.
Would you marry Mr. Dunn, really?
Would you marry your father?
Oh!
A man who was curious to know if a knife could penetrate his bulletproof vest was killed yesterday by a stab wound through the chest. Witnesses say the man, Jeff Turner, 32, urged his brother, Scott Turner, 35, to stab him as hard as he could, believing the vest would stop the knife. It didn't.
The teacher, Jimbo, looks at Dan and a colleague, Isabel.
So how's your opposites on things?
Pretty good.
Where'd you come up with that stuff?
It's just a little something I picked up in college.
A little thick for the eighth grade,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, well, you think, but I don't know, I think they're getting it, you know?
I don't know how you get away with it, though. You know, Joy is so textbook. How's your book?
Don't ask.
Oh. There's always the summer.
Do you want to go? You want to dinner with me again?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys hear that they found a crack file in the locker room?
Jesus. Do they know whose it is?
Whose it is? I don't know. Hey, but you know what? That's a good idea. We could put it in the lost and found, see if anybody claims it. Better yet, why don't we put up flyers with a picture?
Dan laughs weakly. Outside, Dre stops her bike near a man who's wiping oil from the dipstick of the black 4x4.
What's new?
Hello.
I can't hear you. Come over here.
Dre gets off her bike and wheels it towards him.
It's a nice cap.
Thanks. It's Mike's.
Yeah, I know. Talk to him later?
He writes sometimes.
How's he doing in there?
All right, I guess.
Well, if he needs something, let me know, all right? I mean, I know people in there. I can make a call or whatever, all right?
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right.
The man, Frank, ducks back under the bonnet of his car.
What, you thirsty? Huh? You want something to drink?
My bike.
Ain't nobody gonna fuck with that bike.
Inside, Dan's dealer is playing a shoot-'em-up computer game.
Yo, Javi, this is Dre. Hey, Tina! You remember Mike's little sister, Dre, right?
Oh, hey, sweetie.
Come on, sit down. Let me get that juice for you. Help yourself. Come on, sit. I'll be right back.
Dre sits down at the dining table and looks up at some retro black caricature ornaments. She puts the lid back on top of the jar of sweets without taking one. Instead, she gets a lolly out of her pocket and unwraps it. Sucking on it, Dre looks up at more ornaments, of smiling black servants and Native Americans. Dre looks over into the sitting room. Harvey's gone, and the game's paused on the TV.
Yo, pick a hand.
She turns and smiles.
Left.
Ha! You lose. Come on, what's up with that juice?
I'm not thirsty.
Well, don't be a stranger, kid. You can stop through and say hello.
Yeah.
She leaves, carrying the fistful of notes Frank's given her. Arriving home, Dre puts the money into a biscuit tin. Her mum's behind her.
You saw Frank today?
Just ran into him.
Her mum gazes out of the window, pulling a bitter expression. Dre walks away, and her mum takes the money and puts it in her handbag. She sits back down again, wearily. In the classroom.
On September 13, 1971, 1,200 Essex State prison inmates seized control of the prison and took hostages to negotiate changes to the inhumane conditions. Governor Nelson Rockefeller ordered a military assault on the prison, which killed 29 inmates and 10 hostages, everyone caused from police gunshots. an official commission later stated, with the exception of Indian massacres in the late 19th century, the police assault was the bloodiest Wednesday encounter between Americans since the Civil War.
Lying on top of a bare mattress wrapped up in a sheet, Dan reaches across to the alarm clock. He sleepily turns and looks up, rubbing his eyes as his cat stands up to look out of the window. Now dressed, Dan walks out as the cat's eating its breakfast. At school, Dan's leaning back in a chair at his desk reading the paper, while the youngsters sit in silence writing. One boy's discreetly trying to look over the shoulder of the girl sitting in front. Dan looks up from his paper and sees him.
Unbelievable. What are you doing? Go sit in the desk, 10 points off.
The boy gets up and sits at another desk.
Second chances are rare, man. You ought to take better advantage of them.
In the sports hall.
Don't let go. Grab the t-shirt if you need to. You know, a little elbow here and there never killed anybody. You know what I mean? As long as the ref isn't looking. Not in my house.
Drawing on a cigarette, Dan walks along a path at dusk, carrying his bag and flask. He turns a corner, then seeing something, he walks back the way he came. He turns again, puts out his cigarette, and walks past Dre towards his car, pretending he hasn't seen her. She looks over at Dan, then back down the road, stony-faced. In a prison.
It's a nice surprise. Where's Ma?
Working. Daryl's uncle came to visit, so came along with him.
How's Daryl's leg?
It's all right.
It's nice to see you. Those for me?
A bag of sweets.
Frank's been sending me some of them nasty peppermints he always eating.
What is that?
Yo, I threw them shits out. So how's the team?
We suck.
And Ma? Still working too hard?
Yeah.
But she all right for money, though. Frank's still looking out?
Yeah.
Good. He owes us.
She considers her words.
So how come you never told on him?
For what? It made shit more complicated. And shit was already fucked up as it is, you know? So that's all in the past, though. I'm gonna get out of here. You see? I mean, we got Russell Simmons on the case. Russell Simmons.
Trey smiles.
Look, you're gonna be all right.
Dan's painting illustrations on pieces of paper in his flat. Later, he's lying on the sofa watching TV, stroking the cat on his chest. Dan jogs quickly along the bridge over the river, wearing earphones.
The time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious.
The class are watching an old news interview on the TV.
You can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
What is this machine that he's talking about? It's keeping us down. What is it?
Like robots and stuff, right?
It could be robots. It could be robots, but let's say it's a metaphor. He's saying this machine is keeping me down. Now, what is that? What keeps us from being free? Miss Dre.
Prisons.
Absolutely. Absolutely, prisons. Okay? Prisons are definitely a part of it. What else?
White.
White is definitely a part of it. The man.
The school.
The school, exactly. The whole education system is part of the machine. What else?
Aren't you the machine then?
Oh, no, you didn't. What'd you say?
Aren't you the machine?
You're saying I'm the machine?
Yeah, you white, you part of the school.
Oh, yeah, I guess you got a point. All right, so I'm part of the machine, but if I'm part of it, so are you. You are too. We all are. And this is the thing, remember? Everything is made of its opposing force. We may be opposed to the machine, but we're still very much a part of it, right? I work for the government, the school, but I'm also very much opposed to a lot of its policies. You guys hate coming to school, right?
Yes.
Holler back if you heard me. You hate it, but you come anyway.
Sometimes.
Sometimes, exactly.
In his car, Frank passes Dre riding her bike.
Yo, what's up? Where you headed? You look like you're in a rush. Hungry?
Nah, I'm cool.
I'm starved. Come on, burgers on me.
So how's school?
It's all right.
What's up with basketball?
Got a game tomorrow.
What?
You wanna come?
Your mom's gonna be there?
Working.
Pops?
She shakes her head.
Fuck it, I'll come through. Somebody gotta represent. Hello. Tina packed some sweets for Mike last night. Your brother was a good friend. Still is. That dude was funny. He ever showed you the chicken walk?
The what?
The chicken walk. I mean, I can't do it, but... Shit was bananas. Now, we used to work together, right? You ever think about working?
Dre looks down at the table shyly.
Shit. I used to work here.
All right.
$150 a week. Hey, Keisha.
What's up, hon?
We need two milkshakes, baby.
Wearing trousers and a T-shirt, Dan's outside on a bench next to the basketball courts. He looks to his left, stands and smiles. Rachel walks over and they hug. He kisses her on the cheek. Later.
I know I don't sound sincere, but I mean it. You're gonna be great at it.
Thank you. I think
fuck, why can't I say that sincerely?
Do it again. I went back to school.
Huh?
Environmental policy.
No, I know, but I think you're really going to be great.
I believed you the first time.
I'm just nervous. I'm sorry.
She smiles sweetly.
How are you?
Oh, well.
You're still rocking out.
Occasion calls.
He spots a diamond ring on her left hand.
Yeah.
Dan looks Rachel in the eyes, and she stares back at him sympathetically as he starts to glance around and fidget.
Who's the lucky guy?
Met him in the program. I don't know, Dan. Some people change. Some people actually change.
Yeah, not me.
I know.
No way. I'm still an asshole.
You're not an asshole. You're just a big baby.
I'm a big asshole baby.
He looks down miserably and kisses her hand. Rachel rests her head on Dan's shoulder. Later, he's sitting alone on the bench as night falls. At the game... Frank and Tina are watching Dre at the game.
Blue ball.
What is that? You're killing us.
You need to watch yourself. Another blue bad ball. Call. Yeah? Walk it off. Walk it off. Come on, shake it off. Hustle back.
Stop.
bad call, man.
Dan sits with Dre on the bench.
You okay?
Yeah.
He looks over at Frank and Tina, who are eating popcorn.
You want to ride home tonight after the game?
Call the foul. This is fucking bullshit and you know it. Call the foul.
You're gone, coach. I won't tolerate that language on my court.
Oh, it's the language you don't tolerate. The fucking language. Excuse me. I didn't know it was the language.
Dan throws a ball at the coach's backside.
All right. Good luck, girls.
After the game, Dan's driving with his left hand while resting his right fist on top of an ice pack.
I think your hair's changing colors. Get more ice on it.
You should have seen the wall.
I'm telling you, though, you should have knocked that nigga out.
You can't go around knocking people out, you know, or throwing balls at them just because you're upset.
It would have felt good, though, right? Felt good to just get it out.
There's other ways of getting it out.
Right, like you do.
He looks out of the side window.
Look, just because you know that one thing about me, one thing doesn't make a man.
Dre's serious expression breaks into a smile.
What?
One thing doesn't make a man. You know I was just talking about your hand, right?
Yeah, I knew that. Hey, who was that guy that was cheering for you? Do you know him?
Not really. Do you?
No. So we can just keep the whole punching the wall thing a secret, right? Don't tell anybody. Right?
She smiles and gets out of the car. Looking down the street, Dan sees three guys chatting on the corner. He drives down the street, and one of the men waves at him as he turns the corner. Dan licks his lips and looks over at them as he approaches some traffic lights. At the red light, he looks in his rearview mirror at the guys on the corner. He rubs his face and puts the car into reverse.
Shit.
Dan's in the bar. He approaches the barmaid, who starts to pour him his usual, and looks across at a woman sitting alone. He wipes at his nose, then sticks his tongue out and smiles at the woman as she looks over at him.
I had a good day.
She leans back on her stool as he takes a drink. At a motel.
And even after the Dolfer report, right? Even after it says there are no weapons, there are no WMD programs, there is nothing. They do the PIPA study, the University of Maryland thing, and turns out 72% of his supporters still believe there's WMDs. 75% still believe they're supporting Al-Qaeda. And so what the fuck do we do, you know? What do you do? What does one... I'm one man, what do, you know? I used to be so fucked up. I used to be so fucked up, I was just out there, you know? But I fucking cleaned up. I cleaned up.
Dan cuts up and snorts a line.
For the most part, I do it now to get by, but I can handle it, you know what I mean? I tried the rehab thing. I tried it. Didn't work. You know, it works for some people. My ex-girlfriend is getting married.
He looks upset by his own words.
So it works for some people, right? Didn't work for me. The kids keep me focused. And I...
Dan strokes his beard, then wipes his hand across his brow and looks at the ceiling.
You know it's time.
Now he and the woman from the bar are slow dancing in front of a mirror.
Grow old and do some shit.
He holds her closer and she moves her hands further down his back. Dan hugs her tightly and nestles his face in her hair, swaying gently from side to side. In the classroom...
Number three. Change moves in spirals, not circles. For example, the sun goes up and then it comes down. But every time that happens, what do you get? Get a new day. You get a new one. When you breathe, you inhale and then you exhale. But every single time that you do that, you're a little bit different than the one before. We're always changing. And it's important to know that there are some changes you can't control, but that there are others you can.
Dan looks thoughtful as the children get up to leave. Dre slings her bag over her shoulder and goes over to Dan's desk, just as he's yawning widely. He smiles at her and picks up a sandwich.
We're not eating with the teachers.
I just felt like being alone.
I know what you mean.
You do?
Mm-hmm. Dan smiles again.
All right, Mr. Dunn. I'll see you later. Enjoy your lunch.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah, you think I get a ride home later?
Okay.
Okay.
She leaves him chewing on his sandwich.
Okay.
Later, he drives along a sunny street and pulls up at the pavement. Dre is sitting in the passenger seat playing with a basketball. She opens the door and gets out. She slips her arm through her bag strap and, wearing it on her back, jogs up her front steps, bouncing the basketball. Dan watches her from the car as Dre produces a key from her bag. She glances down at him, then appears back at his car's passenger window.
Yo.
Yo.
You're so tired. I lost my key.
You lost your key?
What do we do?
I don't know. You want to call your mother or something?
She's an EMT. I can page her. But I don't know.
I get it.
Frank's large black 4x4 approaches and stops in the road next to Dan's car.
What's up, y'all? You want some candy?
Frank throws something to Dre through the window.
That's all you got?
Oh, shit, I'm sorry. So where your bike at?
They stole it.
They who?
I don't know, I'ma find out, though.
So what, man, y'all just chilling?
She lost my key, her key.
So what, Dre, what? You need a place to stay till your mom's get home?
Nah, man, we're cool.
Are you cool, Dre?
Mm-hmm.
Frank stares at Dan.
All right.
The 4x4 drives off.
Well, you don't know him, huh?
Who, Frank?
Frank? I thought you said you didn't know him.
Just a guy from the neighborhood.
Do you know what he does? Look, I know that I'm the last person that should be saying this.
I don't have to worry about me.
Back at Dan's apartment.
Okay, just give me a sec.
Leaving Dre in the hallway, he straightens the sofa cover and checks around his disheveled room.
Wait.
He picks up a couple of things and puts them away in the cupboard.
Okay.
Dre walks along the hall and into the room with the basketball under one arm.
Have a seat. You can watch TV if you want. Make yourself at home.
She sits down on the sofa.
You got them old things?
Records?
Yeah.
Yeah, little Miss MP3, I got records. You should check them out. Might learn something.
She wanders around the room, then leans forward to examine photos in a bookcase. One shows Rachel. Another shows a group at a table.
Who's this?
My parents and my brother.
They still live together?
Yeah.
I got so many books about black people.
I got books about all kinds of people.
Can I borrow one?
He looks at the book she's holding.
Yeah.
Who's she?
It's an old friend.
What happened to her?
Oh, well, you should mind your business.
You put it up there. I've seen her before. She was at the game that night. Right?
Yeah.
She glances around his small kitchen.
Can you help her?
He chops a carrot.
You like to cook?
Yeah, sometimes. Mostly just for special occasions.
Got a lady coming over tonight or what?
Yeah.
What's like a lot?
She's all right.
She like you?
I don't know. I'm hard to like sometimes.
That's true.
Oh. Oh, yeah, you just gotta... You mash those up. You mash them up with your hands. Get in there and squeeze them.
See, what you need is some jokes. Women love jokes.
Okay, you got any?
What do you call cheese? It's not yours.
What?
Nacho cheese. It's yours if you need it.
Absolutely not. That's a funny joke. Thank you.
Her face turns serious.
Hey, Coach.
Yeah?
Can I ask you something?
Mm-hmm. He raises his eyebrows at her, waiting.
What's it like when you smoke that stuff?
He doesn't look up at her, but carries on chopping.
Sorry.
No, don't be. It's all right.
He rests his elbows on the table with one hand on top of the other and looks thoughtful. Dre lowers her solemn gaze to the table. He picks his knife up and gets back to work.
Mash him up.
Hope you have a nice date, Mr. Dunn.
He's driven her home again.
Hey, thanks for the joke.
At home, he stirs a sauce.
So my buddy gets in the car and the cab driver's like, oh, I'm so sorry, I'm late. I had to kill somebody on the way here, you know? And he's like, what? He's like, no, yeah, no, I killed him. I killed him. And he's like, what did you... You killed him? He's like, yeah, I kill people all the time. I'm killing people, you know, anybody who really kind of mouth off to me, I fucking kill them. Turns out he thinks kill is the word for punch, right? Wow. So he's punching people. My friend thinks that he's killing them. He's terrified. And he thinks that the word for cement is semen. So he's like, well, basically, you can't go anywhere in India without, you know, stepping on semen. Semen everywhere. There's semen buildings. It's a lot of people, you know, so everything is made of semen, you know?
I didn't say every day. Well, you're her father. Today she got locked out the house. She didn't even have your number at work.
At home, Dan snorts drugs, then licks his fingertips. He walks through his apartment to rejoin Isabel. She stands smiling at him seductively. Both their meals lie untouched. They lie together, kissing passionately. She clasps his arm as he moves on top of her. In her bedroom, Dre looks at herself in a mirror and empties makeup accessories on the table. She brushes on eyeshadow. Isabel strokes Dan's chest and cradles his face as he makes love to her. Dre applies a dark lipstick, then purses her lips. She brushes on blusher and begins straightening her tightly curled hair. As they make love, Isabel holds Dan with a large emerald-coloured ring adorning one finger. With her hair now loose, Dre wipes the lipstick from her lips and looks at herself in the mirror. Isabel eats breakfast at Dan's apartment.
Are you a communist?
What?
I was looking through your books. Che in Africa?
So?
The Communist Manifesto?
If I had a copy of Mein Kampf, would that make me a Nazi?
No, this is really good. Very tasty.
You should try it warm.
Well, you don't have a copy of Mein Kampf, but if you did, then yes, I'd ask you if you were a Nazi.
Maybe I'm hiding it.
Why would you hide it?
It's just not cool to be a Nazi anymore, baby.
She smiles as he walks into the living room and picks up paperwork. She gets up from the kitchen table and stands in the doorway, watching him lounging back on the sofa.
So what are you doing today?
Oh, I gotta...
It's great you're writing.
Yeah, we'll see.
I should let you get to it, then.
Yeah, thanks, though. I had a good time.
Yeah, me too.
She wanders to the door, leaving Dan thinking. A pupil in class.
On November 1st, 1977, Harvey Milk was elected to the San Francisco City Council. He was the first openly gay person to ever be elected to public office. A year later, he was assassinated by another member of the city council called Dan White.
Harvey Milk had been shot and killed.
Dan White claimed he shot Milk because he ate too much junk food that day. This would later be known as the Twinkie Defense. Is that for real?
That night, Dan is dancing at a school disco. Spotting Dre, he playfully shows off some moves. She looks across at him and smiles. He saunters over to her, and pulls her onto the dance floor with a smile. She smiles as they dance together, and Isabel smiles as well, watching them from her seat. Students in the crowd start to notice that the pair are dancing closely together, with Dan standing behind Dre and their faces close. They part and move away in different directions. As Dre goes to join her friends, Dan steps out of the crowd, swinging his arms, then putting his hands on his hips. Alone outside in a grimy alcove, he snorts something. He spots Dre heading up some steps.
Dre, come here. Where are you going?
Home.
I'll give you a ride home.
It's cool, I got a ride.
I don't really think you should be riding with him, do you think?
Dre, is everything cool?
Everything's okay. I'm gonna take her home.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that right, D? Huh? You getting a ride with Teach?
Nah, man.
Dre, come here. Everything's fine. Have a nice night. I'm gonna take her home, okay?
Hey, look, man, you know what? Let me introduce myself, huh? I'm Frank.
Come here now, okay? Come here.
Hey, wait.
Coach.
You need to take it easy, man.
I'm sorry.
Come on.
Did I hurt you? Didn't mean to.
Let's see you later, Teach.
Dan watches helplessly as Dre goes with Frank. Dan drives through the nighttime city and finds himself back in the bar.
Done, right? Lloyd Dixon. My daughter Paula went to Jefferson. Paula Dixon? You taught history, right?
Paula Dixon?
She's in her first semester at Georgetown, history major. You have a good night.
As the man goes, Dan picks up his drink.
Dave!
In the morning, he puts food out for his cat.
Dave!
He has a wrap of drugs wedged in one nostril. The cat seems to be lying on the floor, not moving. Bewildered, Dan turns from it and puts his hands on his hips. He snorts, then is in class.
In Asia, the idea that things are made of opposites, yin and yang, dates back 3,000 years. Taoism saying change is the only constant. But that just died in the West. It just couldn't be both. It couldn't be black and white. It couldn't be right and wrong. It had to be one or the other. Who am I to say that Aristotle's wrong, right? But that doesn't make any sense. These things need each other. The idea that all God's creations are perfect. Perfect. So just to suggest that a tree is it's crooked and it's straight. It's strong and it's weak. Is to suggest that God created something imperfect. They do, however, acknowledge it in people. We are sinners. But we can strive to be good. Just not in nature itself, I guess, you know.
He touches his nose and finds it bleeding.
Oh, I'm gonna go. You guys write down what's on the board.
In a staff room, Dan splashes his face over a sink.
Broward County, Florida middle schools mistakenly failed over 6,500 students in June due to what it later called a computer error. The school official called the total count of students affected an insignificant sum.
Jimbo chucks down his paper.
What goes, Danny boy? How's history?
I can't do it anymore.
I know the feeling. Hang in there. Things will get better. And if not,
There's always summer.
Dan looks weary.
Don't you have class right now?
He lies down on a sofa while Jimbo stares at him.
Look, look, look.
That's him over there.
That ain't even your bike.
That's my bike. There he go right there.
You're a little round, too.
That's my bike, nigga.
What?
I said that's my bike. What the fuck you doing on my bike?
I ain't know it was yours.
You ain't know it was mine? What you mean you ain't know it was mine? You always see me on this bike.
Sorry. I just didn't know it was your bike.
I'm hella sorry, nigga. I should fuck you up. Get off my bike.
Dre snatches her cap the boy's wearing and her bike.
So what happened, huh?
What?
I thought you was gonna fuck him up.
There have to.
Oh, shit. Okay, you didn't have to.
The doors to a science museum open and the kids rush in. They start operating the functioning exhibits, but Dre moves off to be by herself. She finds Dan flaked out at the bottom of a long tube slide and looks down it. He notices and looks up at her.
Hey.
Hey.
She emerges at the bottom of a second slide next to Dan and sits at the bottom of it. He struggles a little to sit up.
Hey.
He points at her cap.
Back.
Yeah.
Dre watches Dan.
Did you know my brother?
I knew of him, but he wasn't in any of my classes or anything.
Think I could end up like him?
Dan looks away briefly, thinking.
You?
Dan stares at Dre thoughtfully. An airliner flies through the blue sky overhead, and Dan parks his car in a suburban neighborhood, then gets out. Smoking, he strides across the road purposefully towards a group of people. Frank gets up as he approaches.
Hey, what's up, Teach? How's the Dianetics going?
It's Dialectics. Can I talk to you?
What's up?
Okay, look. I hate to be this guy right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I need you to stay away from Dre.
Excuse me?
You heard me, okay? So just do me this solid, all right, man? Please.
Do you solid?
You know what I'm saying. You understand.
Oh, so this like stay away from the girl, she's too precious kind of shit?
I'm not kidding.
Oh, I know.
So you understand?
Look, man. Dre is my family. She's my friend, man. All these cats, these are my friends. Now, would you like to be my friend, man?
What the fuck is this? The fucking romper room?
What the fuck is the romper room?
Are you fucking listening to
Look,
me?
Why are you so fucking angry, man?
Because you are not listening
Look,
to
right
me.
I'm right here, baby. Tell me what you're talking
I'm
about.
I'm telling you to do something good.
Oh.
Are you capable of that?
Oh. So now we're back to the point of what is white is right, right? So,
Fuck you. So this has nothing to do with
no,
that.
No, no, no. It's good for Dre to have somebody like you looking out for, Mr. Model A1 fucking citizen.
I don't know. I don't know.
Dan wipes his mouth and loosens his neck muscles.
Fuck. Because I'm supposed to do something, right? But what am I supposed to do?
Frank looks at him, frowning. Dan looks pale and drawn.
Look, man. You want a drink?
What?
Motherfucker, do you want a drink? I mean, are you thirsty? How'd that sound?
Okay.
You want some candy? Man, don't touch that cat. Hey, y'all, this Teach. Damn, man, this is my boy. That's Mike's little sister, Dre. It's a teacher.
What's happening?
You ain't bringing that shit in my house, man. Put that cat down. You right, man? Put your ass out here.
Dan puts down the small cat he's picked up and goes inside. Dre is cycling through the city wearing her cap and headphones. She stops pedaling and freewheels along the sunny pavement. Dan looks exhausted as he drives after dark. The blurred city lights rush past his window as his heavy eyelids almost close. He bangs on the window of Isabel's door, hanging his head wearily. Dan's shadow waves a hand on the other side of the blinds on the window, and Isabel opens the door.
Dan. What's going on?
I am not now, nor have I ever been.
He staggers in, with his white shirt unbuttoned over his vest.
What's happening?
Just in the neighborhood. Thought maybe I'd surprise you.
Yeah, it's a surprise. That's true.
He sways, staring into a mirror.
You okay?
Yeah, I'm good. How about you? How about you? I'm
good. A little tired, but I'm good.
How was it late?
Well, you know, what time is it? 2:30, yeah.
Oh, that late?
Yeah, well, you know, we got class tomorrow.
Oh, I forgot about class. I'm sorry about that.
Dan leans close to kiss her.
What are you doing? There's a line. I'm trying. Not right now, okay? No. Dan. Okay, you're doing good. What are you doing?
He collapses on top of her.
Stop it.
Isabel manages to shove him in the face, pushing him back, and runs from the room. He sits back on the sofa with a hand over his hurt face, then checks for blood. He grabs the cover from the sofa's armrest and holds it over his nose and mouth. He sits forward, then leans his head against the closed door to the next room.
Oh, that was weird. What the fuck was that? I don't know. Listen, feel free to whatever, you know? Whatever, no hard feelings, I completely understand. Okay? Maybe I'll see you tomorrow. Or not, I don't know, it's hard to say really where I'm gonna be. I'm so fucked up right now. I hope you know I really liked you. I had fun. Not tonight, I didn't have fun, but other nights I had. We had fun, right?
He lifts his head from the door slightly and rubs his eyes.
Look, I'm bleeding a bit, so I'm using your couch arm thing. But I'm gonna wash it. Okay?
Dan steps back from the door.
Sorry.
He shuffles back through the room towards the front door. As soon as he's gone, the door to the next room opens. The next day, Dan is sleeping, propped up on his elbow at his desk in front of his class. He has a Stars and Stripes plaster on his bottom lip. His eyes open, and he sees the boy copying the work of the girl sitting in front of him again. Dan marches to the girl's desk. He snatches her paper and slaps it on the boy's desk for him to see better, then returns to his desk. Terence sniggers, but stops when Dan looks over. Later, Dan sits in his car, slowly eating a large crisp. Dre appears at the passenger window and knocks on it. He leans over and winds the window down. He sits up and squints at her.
What?
House, thanks.
How's it look? What do you want?
Nothing.
Look, you know, you don't really see other kids coming up to my car, Dre, to talk to me. It's, yeah. I'm your teacher. Not your friend. Why don't you go play with other kids your own age? I'm just trying to be alone.
Then be alone then, asshole.
She walks off, and he leans out of the window.
Bitch.
Dan arrives back at the staff room in dark glasses, with his jacket over one shoulder. He walks slowly through the room, and Jimbo looks round at him from a group of other teachers. He watches Dan pouring himself some coffee. Dan glances back over his shoulder at the teachers as one of them looks away from him. Jimbo steps up to Dan's side.
I think Henderson's looking for you.
Must be about the new curriculum, huh?
Yeah, no, I'm sure that's it. But, hey, Dan, if there's anything else going on, you know, if you need any help, you know, anything. You know, we're here for you, pal.
Dan pats him on the shoulder, then knocks on Principal Henderson's open door. He looks disheveled with his tie hanging loose.
Close the door.
He steps inside, then sits at her desk.
Is there something going on that I should know about?
He smiles dazedly. Dre in class.
On September 11, 1973, the CIA helped overthrow and murder democratically elected Chilean president Salvador Allende. The military coup led to mass disappearances, assassinations, and tortures of thousands of Chilean civilians under the leadership of U.S.-backed dictator Augusto Pinochet. Secretary of State Henry Kissinger said of Allende's 1970 election, quote, "These issues are much too important for the Chilean voters to decide for themselves."
A woman with strawberry blonde hair opens her front door.
Danny. Hi, Mom.
What happened to your lip?
That's funny, thanks.
That's good.
That's good.
So, okay. How's the novel?
Let's see.
You're writing a novel?
It's a kid's book that I haven't started yet.
I love children's books. What's it about?
Dialectics.
Dialectics. What is that?
It's a, it's a theory that attempts to explain how change works.
Sounds interesting.
How does change work, Dan?
Let's save it for dessert, Dan.
So I hear you guys went to the march.
Yeah, it was really great.
No, really.
400,000 people there.
Oh, that's fantastic. What did they report it in the press? 200,000?
Danny Glover was there.
Danny Glover? Oh, I like him. What was that movie that he was in, honey? What was that?
Legal Weapon. Cindy, what is it exactly? And what was his name?
Charles.
Charles, get your fat ass off my bike. That's what she said. Before I fuck your fat ass up.
You said that.
You know she did. Then my man started stressing. He started apologizing. I'm sorry. I didn't know it was yours. I'm sorry.
Then what you do? You knock him out.
I tell
her. Didn't have to.
I didn't have to. That's my girl right there poking people on the street.
Oh, Danny, you won't believe what I found this week.
You guys really live it up around here.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you hear that? The rock star approved.
Cindy Lou.
Come on, Jeff, didn't you tell us around here we always party like it's 1999?
Oh, my God, I couldn't be any more embarrassing.
Did you know I was in Vietnam?
No.
Check out the scar.
You remember?
Remember this one? No.
Dan looks across the table at his mum, who smiles at him as she sips her wine. He seems to be in a world of his own and gently touches the plaster on his bottom lip thoughtfully. Dre is looking at the small black caricature ornaments in Frank's house.
Why you got these scary things?
Got them off the internet. Some dude in Texas.
I wouldn't want these things in my house.
Well, they in my house, and my house is your house. So deal with it.
He smiles as he spoons a small amount of Coke into a tiny plastic bag. Dre watches him.
You ever sell the coach?
Why?
Just wondering.
Look, don't you think you and teacher's relationship is a little,
What?
Inappropriate?
What do you mean?
Look, he your teacher, Dre. I mean, sometimes you act like...
He's my friend.
Look, he's a basehead. All right? And baseheads... don't have friends. I mean, this motherfucker was outside my house yesterday telling me that we shouldn't be associated with each other.
Dan's mother and the rest of the family are dancing in their living room while he lies back in an armchair with one hand resting behind his head. He smiles as he watches his mother dance, then catches the eye of his father, who watches him with a thoughtful frown from the next room. His father finishes what he's doing, then turns and picks up his drink and sips it. Gonna take a freight train. Frank is driving Dre in his car through the night streets. She watches him gesturing with his free hand as he talks to her. Dan's father collapses heavily into the comfy brown sofa next to him with his drink.
Hey, teach me something, Dan. Teach me. Some aponics. Is that what they got you teaching in that zoo? Hey, tell me something. How do you say asshole in aponics?
Dan places his glass on a side table and sits forward.
Hey. I'm sorry, I'm an asshole. I love you. You know that, right?
Yeah, I know.
Good.
241. Apartment 3.
Frank passes a small brown paper package to Dre. As he sits waiting in his car, his mobile rings.
Hello. What's up?
I bet you are so good with those kids, Daniel Dunn.
I am really proud of you.
Thanks, Mom. Sometimes I think they were the only thing keeping me sane.
It's a good thing, you know, to teach. Your father and I thought we were going to change the world when we were young, you know. What did we know?
Well, you stopped the war, so...
You think so?
Yeah.
That's nice, honey. I think it was more about Daniel Ellsberg than anything we did, yeah?
One man alone means nothing.
I guess not. Do you hear from Rachel anymore?
Not really.
I saw her at the pharmacy the other day. Maybe it's your mom.
Maybe.
Well, you know, she looked great. You should give her a call. But, you know, clean up a little first.
I'm killing you with the tie. You can't stop it. I'm fine.
Happy?
I'm so happy.
That's so great. So when you're happy, I'm happy. Watch the basketballs, okay, honey?
He thinks.
Hey, Mom?
Watching her preparing to do the washing up, apparently not having heard him, he changes his mind about what he was going to say, turns, and leaves the room. Dre crosses through the headlight beams of Frank's parked 4x4, having delivered the package.
How was it? Easy, right? I saw you shaking all across the street and shit. Sure beat the hell out of flipping burgers.
Thank you.
He hands her a note from the money she's collected for him. Dan sitting alone in a dark room, smoking. A light comes on, but he doesn't react. He finally looks up, with heavy eyelids.
Your mom said there's more wine out here. Found it.
Do you like my brother?
Yeah.
Why?
He's nice. He's funny.
Does he tell you jokes?
Sometimes.
Like what?
Like... Knock, knock.
Who's there?
The interrupting cow.
The interrupting...
Woo!
She grins, and Dan smiles as he draws on his cigarette.
Yeah?
The city lights and traffic race past Dan's car window as he drives home. A solitary tear trickles down his cheek, and he wipes it away. Dre appears on a pavement corner at the motel. She walks up to a door, sees its number, then goes to the door next to it. She glances around as someone answers the door. It shuts again in her face. She starts to go.
Where are you going? Come inside, sweetie. Ain't nobody gonna bite you.
Dre steps into the room as the woman holds the door open, wearing a pink bra. A camera flashes from somewhere in the room. A stereo plays music, and a TV is showing a rap video. Dre looks around the shambolic room as a scantily clad woman snaps another photo with a digital camera, while the other woman smokes. Through an open door on the other side of the room, Dre sees Dan appear and look back at her. On one of two beds, the woman with the camera shows a photo to a man sprawled out in his white pants and vest. Dan closes his eyes with a wasted smile, hunches forward, then crouches in the doorway. He stares up calmly at Dre, then nods with an understanding smile and holds folded banknotes out to her. Looking solemn, she steps forward and takes the money from his fingertips. Dan watches her casually, completely at ease. She opens the motel room door and pauses to stare back at him for a long moment before going. Back at the car, Frank takes the money and looks at Dre.
Everything cool?
She stares ahead out of the windscreen without looking at him.
I guess we should get you home then.
The car drives off. In the morning, Dre is lying asleep on the sofa at her home when the door opens and her mother comes in. Dre hardly stirs. Her mother reaches down and rubs her shoulder, stirring her, then sits down and puts Dre's head on her lap. Dre's mother, still in her uniform with its metallic badges, shuts her eyes. Dre's awake.
I don't think it's a good idea you fall asleep in front of the TV every night. What's up, Dre? You in a funk today? Don't tell me why.
Just think about Mike, I guess.
Yeah, I miss your brother, too. We'll go see him as soon as I get some time off. I can't believe they hit me with another double tomorrow. Can you believe that? Get a goddamn break. So what else is happening? I heard something about a civil rights thing with Oprah or something. Dre?
A tear trickles down Dre's cheek. Dan's apartment is messy and deserted. Not behind his desk in his classroom at school. A serious-looking teacher walks in and puts his bag on the desk. He writes in chalk on the board, Mr. Light, drawing a smiley face for the dot over the eye.
Hello, everyone. I'm Mr. Light. I will be filling in for your teacher.
Where's Mr. Dunn?
I really don't know.
When's he coming back?
They don't really tell me too much in the office. Why don't you guys tell me what you've been learning?
After school, Dre walks with her bike along a school path towards the gate. Frank is standing waiting by his black 4x4 as she approaches.
Yo, what's good, Dre?
I don't know what's good with you.
Chilling? You need a ride?
I got my bike.
I'll throw it in the back.
I gotta get home.
Well, I'll take you.
Not today.
Dre, I gotta see you around, huh?
Frank watches her ride off, frowning. Dre arrives, pushing her bike at the motel. The door finally opens, and Dan's exhausted face peers out of the gap. He's wearing a white dressing gown and squints at Dre. He hesitates before opening the door wider and allowing her inside. Dre glances around the room.
What happened to your friends?
They're gone.
He looks up at her and manages a smile.
You missed a hell of a party.
Looks like it.
She looks at him and sits down on the bed opposite him. Dan smiles at her and nods, then leans forward to take something from her.
Thank you.
He puts the green lolly into his mouth.
Absolutely.
Gray looks around the messy room.
Ready to go?
Dan looks at her. Now he stands wearing a vest in his bathroom before picking up an electric razor. Wearing trousers and a clean blue shirt open over his vest, he places two drinks in tall glasses on his coffee table.
You missed a spot.
Dan's living room is now neat and tidy. He sits down on his sofa, raises his glass to Dre, before taking a long, slow drink. She walks over to the other end of the sofa and sits down. Dan puts his glass on the table and looks at her.
Knock, knock.
Who's that?
The interrupting cow.
The interrupting cow who?
He realizes he's messed up the joke.
Moo.
That was horrible.
He grins. Then they look at each other briefly from opposite ends of the sofa.